Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? I'm sorry, I was waiting for you to respond. Go ahead. Join me now, won't you?
Yes, I will join you.
Thank you. Well, I guess I should tell you what we're going to do. We're going to visit for a while, and I'm going to speak with you. And ultimately, I'm trying to convey something to you, but I'm being cagey about it. It's a roundabout route. I want them to like me, but they seem real dangerous. Chimpy apes, I live with chimpy apes. I want to fit in, but I can't figure out the rules to keep changing with chimpy apes. I live with chimpy apes. I try to figure out myself. I look inside of me and don't know what to do. Turns out I'm a chimpy ape too. I live with chimpy apes. What are they? They're dangerous and treacherous. They lie and cheat. But also they can be sweet and make kissy lips. They have fangs and also tongues and really sweet eyes. But then they bite your face. Chimpy apes, even though you're one of them. Kill you, love you, boom, boom, boom. Well, it's so great being part of the human, whatever we are. Some kind of chimpy ape. And doesn't it seem like that sometimes, friends, that you are locked in an enclosure at a zoo, maybe the zoo of the universe, and you say, how did I get in with these treacherous suit-wearing bonobos who have somehow normalized and enculturated poo-flinging? And then they've taken it, they've made it subtle, too. Oh, my goodness, that's evolution. That's what separates us from the chimps. The chimps got stuck with literal poo-flinging, and humans were like, there are subtle emotional ways to do this. I can toss a turd at someone and get it on their feelings, you know, and it doesn't have to be a literal thing. Oh, my goodness, I'm not here to do that. I'm here to clean you up. I'm one of those cleaner species. Don't you feel that way? Maybe we're reincarnated. I don't know what to believe about that, but I know that I don't often feel, say, maybe I'm not a monkey. Maybe I was something else. I feel like maybe in another life I was a shell. And you say, well, that's not a, you mean a clam or something that has a shell or a snail or whatever species that makes it. And I say, well, no, not if you're an animist. I believe the shell also has a spirit. There's a shell spirit. If there wasn't, there wouldn't be so much shell iconography. See how shells dumb? They somehow, you know there's a force at work, that they have a spirit or some kind of angel because there's so much shell stuff. And the same way as with skeletons. They also have a separate spirit from the person. So there's a sort of skeleton spirit, and they're fun and real limited. You know, they like to dance on tin roofs or something like that. That's what inspired the harpsichord. Someone heard that, say, I hear a skeleton dancing on a metal roof. I'm going to go invent the harpsichord. And then pianoforte, the inventor of the keyboard, said, no, you know what? We need something subtle. And he invented, or she, we don't even know what piano, what kind of name is it? Besides the gender of someone who invents an instrument. Unless you play it with your parts, it doesn't matter. So they said, we want something dynamic. And they made a dynamic instrument. What is that? What is dynamic, Hardy? Well, I'm going to demonstrate some dynamics right now. It's not a religion that celebrities are participating in or something like that. What it is the harpsichord, plink, 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 plank, plunks at one volume. But the piano forte, and I don't know why they dropped forte. Will Forte uses that surname, and it's a lovely surname, and it means strength or loudness. And then piano means soft. And so if you name a child soft loud, you know, first of all, they're going to be conflicted. But I had a friend, a dear friend, still have him. He's still alive. I guess we're still friends, too. And his name is Bland. And he's not. Well, he is and he isn't. In the most wonderful way, he's a mild person. But, you know, Bland's a bit of a misnomer. And his opposite name was Spicy. We'd do, I don't want to go into that. You know, when you're in college and you've got nothing to do, mostly. Because we didn't have study. I don't remember having studies or anything like that. I just remember living in an apartment and then them going, you got to leave now. So I'm not sure. Maybe I was supposed to go to the classes. I'm looking back now. Is that the source of the nightmares? Where I'm like, oh, you've got to be at this class. You don't even know your schedule. I'm not sure that's a nightmare as much as a memory. And I'm just having it. Oh, it's coming right back at me again. Just like I'm burping up green peppers. I tasted that again. My goodness, how many times have your actions in the past come up and you tasted them again in your mouth a little bit? Is that what it's like to the past? You know, the word regurgitation. I remember when I was in pedagogy, they would say, don't just get the students, pedagogy, to regurgitate. I said, I don't want them to regurgitate. My goodness, I had someone throw up in the back seat of my car and it ruined the car. Getting it out is terrible. And they said, no, that's not what we mean. First of all, you're fired. Second of all, let me explain it anyway. Just like when villains explain to a dying James Bond what they're going to do exactly. So, oh, now that you told me, I feel like I'm going to live. So I'm going to tell you right now, I don't mean that kind of regurgitate. I mean just, I tell you something, you just tell it to me back. And I said, is that not learning? And they said, no, that's regurgitation. So I've been thinking I was learning. What was I doing when I was regurgitating? Perhaps I was, I'm in here studying. And I'm not. I'm blowing chunks. But you're saying, do not rhetorically blow chunks or whatever when you're learning. You want to keep it down. That's what I say. The lesson has to be, it's not enough to eat a thing. You must digest it. And I hope the show is like that. So I've listened to them one at a time and I cacked it back up because it didn't feel like food. Even though it said Miracle Nutrition, I apologize. I know that sometimes this is not for everyone because it's not, I'll tell you what, if you like it, it's food. If you don't, it's medicine. If you really don't, it's medicine that's actually poison or something. I don't know. Bless you. Just don't go around telling people you don't like it. I don't need that. And so what should I do for you? Well, I gave you that free show that you didn't like. So the best, it would be wonderful if you just keep it under your hat. Well, can we be friends? Yeah, now we're best friends.
I hated you. Now we're best friends.
We are best friends. Oh, my goodness. That's how I feel a little bit. With me, that was me and my self-doubt. Because we made peace a long time ago. So, you know what? There doesn't need to be two of us, is how I looked at it. And we can bind ourselves. And I've channeled the self-doubt into a sort of forgetting. So I forgot to doubt myself. I know you're supposed to. I think I can remain humble.
See, don't you think you're not going to remain humble?
Look at me. I am living proof that you can remain humble with not a lot of effort. Because there's nothing, what should I not be humble about? Exactly. So there you go. And life has done that. I don't think I sought it out. Some people go, I need more humility. Well, I don't know. You probably have more than you think. Oh my goodness. Sometimes it's difficult to open our eyes and look around, especially if we're submerged in a chlorinated pool, which it feels like sometimes, or a lake that's too warm, and you're thinking, if I open my eyes, some bacteria is going to swim in to that immunocompromised place or whatever. You know, I don't have anything in my eye to fight off that. So don't open them. Because there's so much you can sense with your eyes closed. And I think if you don't read too much into some things, then that's a wonderful, if you just listen without any comprehension. Now, the other day I was looking for sounds to go to sleep by, and it's just everything, because who knows what bores one person bores another one sometimes. And it turns out that you can just, people doing a lecture, and especially designed to fall asleep, say, I'm going to do a boring, you know, 2-hour-long lecture. Isn't that wonderful? But that doesn't put me to sleep, because I'm looking for the meaning. And I find even in white noise, I find myself looking for meaning and patterns. And sometimes you can, if it loops, you can find them, you know. And then you can hallucinate all sorts of things. I've heard all sorts of things in the static. Everybody's got stamps. Everybody's got stamps. Something like that. And you go, someone's singing, everyone has staves. Like in a, I guess like a cask. Now, why would somebody be whispering that in my white noise? But they could be. I always wonder, well, am I subjecting myself to some kind of subliminal something? Is this radio show subliminal messages from some nefarious organization? I don't know, a Kabul or Cabal or Kabola, Kabbalah? Coppola? So it could be. And you might be subconsciously, unconsciously manipulated into doing something or thinking something or having a feeling or a value that you don't feel like you really, you know, said that you would do, have that, agree to. I don't know what. My goodness. Sometimes there's just one word for something. You don't need to say 10 of them. It's finding that word. That's the trick. So if I want to provide something to you. And a friend the other day said, you know when, Hardy, you know what I like that you do? And I said, what? And then they did a little dance demonstrating it. And I said, well, what's the, but on the show. And he said, this is what I like. When you learn something and then you info dump. I go, well, that's not the way I put it, but when I teach, I get enthusiastic about something, and I want to teach about it. Yes. Well, thank you. And it's, you know, you'd learn a little something. And so I want to share with you today something like that, but I don't have it. So is it enough to want to educate someone? So I'm just going to make something up. And I think that's the origin of the story, or the fiction story. And I believe that Don Quixote and some of those started as a story of Genji or whatever. They were like, I'm just going to lie because I wasn't there. So I'm going to make stuff up. And so that's okay. That's good. Everyone has done it. You know, Shakespeare's history plays. How historically accurate are they? So we've looked into some. And here's something we found out. Here's a little skit I do. It's called Macbeth, but accurate. Here it goes.
I'm Macbeth. I didn't really dress like this.
I don't know. I'm working on it. But it's going to be, so it's a little highbrow and it's a little lowbrow at the same time. And you can do that through Shakespeare, who is a wonderfully accessible, in his time, Shakespeare was like, you know, like the crowds would like him. He was like Andrew Dice Clay or something. And people would throw objects or food or something and say insults. And now he say, oh, that's high theater. And it's in a language we call Shakespearean or Elizabethan English, because it was a woman named Elizabeth who actually wrote the plays, Elizabeth Bacon. And Elizabeth Frances Bacon, her name was. And she was a part-time Queen of England, but also a very accomplished playwrightress. And just like the tale of Genji, there's a beautiful story behind that. Here it is. I was going back in time one time and selling pencils, of all things. And so I was looking for people who were interested in writing. There weren't enough at the time. I was going back to like people stamping stuff in clay tablets, which is fine, you know. And then I came up with this idea of clay tablet whiteout.
What is that?
So what it does is that it's fresh clay, and then you fill in like a mistake. You go, oh, I didn't mean to stamp double Y like that. So I'm going to fill it in with a little of the putty, correction putty. And then before it's dry, you restamp that a little bit. It doesn't work great, but it's at a pinch. Because could you imagine misspelling something on one of those Assyrian tablets or something, and then someone finds it, oh, it's in the British BM. They go through all the British people's BM looking for tablets and everything. Oh, it's in the British Museum, and it's got a misspelling in it. Now, the Dead Sea Scrolls, which are written in a language called ancient, they have all, there's all sorts of things in them, and a lot of it is being suppressed because some of it are like really good recipes. And the way this world works is that some things have to be kept, you know, people can't have all their needs satisfied because you have to sell them things. So they have to be kept in a constant state of longing so that they can be controlled. If you give me, if someone's needs are met, what good are they, right? Because then they're just an independent creature out there. They can't be part of my sick vision. So that's, oh, I'm thinking like a chimpy ape. Mm-hmm. Chimpy apes need a diaper for their head. Because sometimes their thoughts are poo. Are yours too? Oh, you are a chimpy ape. You don't have to give in to it necessarily. I always think that, you know, because we know looking back that not every monkey is terrible, really. I remember when I was young, there was always at least one kind of famous chimp, and Muggs Cigar or something his name would be. And I think even in Richard Lemparsky's Whatever Became Of, you know, whatever came up, Mr. C. Muggs McGilly or whatever his name was, you know, from the Tonight Show. I don't know who he was on. Something like that. Oh, I miss all the old timers. Are you one? I've been promoted. I was looking at photos the other day and I go, good God, I'm my grandfather. Because I'm the age now as I started to remember him. Right? This is the age that I met him at, about grandfatherly age. And then he didn't make it way much farther than that, but he, you know, and he enjoyed a lot of things in life, and it's a trade-off. So I might not have gotten him for all those, you know, for may have been deprived of 10-15 years, but I gotta tell you, cigarettes are tasty. And I smoked them years ago, and I did finally quit. And I go, you know what? What if I had someone loved me at some point? You know, and now they do. And so I'm glad I quit then. But I don't know if I've extended my life or not. I always have a fear if I do something healthy that the fates or whatever. I guess my idea of God is really more like, I guess it got like Greek or Roman or something. Because I was, for me, there's like a bunch of gods, they're playing poker, and you say something tempting fate, and they go, what? What did I just hear? Well, let's see about that. And then, you know, this dysfunctional demigod or something tries to teach me an ironic lesson, and I don't want that. So, but I don't think that can happen. See, I don't think there's, I've been told that, you know, you're tempted fate. But a lot of times it's just you don't want to bring anybody down. You know, why would you talk about some disaster as you're, you know, on a big ship? Like, I mean, that ship's crossing the Atlantic for the first time ever. And its soundness is in doubt. Don't make Titanic jokes still, even if it is the Titanic. Then especially don't, because people are going to be totally traumatized. How did you know? Because I did that. Oh, my goodness. I was trying to warn people on the Titanic. But what's the point?
you know, once it's going, what are they going to do? So I'm like, oh, you're doomed. And I did this for days. And then, you know, so I ruined a lot of it. And then they could have just had a good time right up to that point where they didn't. But I messed it up with all my prognosticating and all my doom and glooming. I don't want to do that to you. Oh, my goodness. What are you telling me, Hardy? Don't worry about it. Let's just have some fun. Oh, my gosh. Let's have a picnic in our imagination. No, let's not do that. I would still get sick. Anytime I see a grill, I go, oh, God. I don't
grill a lot, but here, come on over.
Then you know you're going to get something. Something's going to be tainted, or I don't like to go to barbecues, really. I mean, I do and I don't, if they're catered. But sometimes people are amateurs, and I'm not, so I don't know how well that's cooked. You know, chimpanzee has to be cooked really, really thoroughly. In fact, it's best to make a sort of stew and then highly flavor it with something else, like gazelle. So this is just your stuff you pick up. A lot of times, well, where'd you pick it up, Hardy? In the movie industry, back in the day, back in the 30s. Sometimes you'd have to eat your co-star if things went, you know, south. So, well, I guess we're eating Mr. Muggs' magooey, and I hate to do it.
Oh, that's okay.
He didn't care. He's given up anyway. Bless him. Now, you'd think this is awful. Gosh, I hate to admit it. You should eat it all, but I kept the monkey paw because of that story. You know the monkey's paw story? Did you have to read that in advanced literature?
A lot of times in the advanced literature classes, which I was participating in when I was in school,
they would subject you to a story called The Monkey's Paw. And if somebody would get a monkey's paw, I know there's a lot of them, say, you get three wishes riddled with irony. And then you always pick something wrong. You go, I wish I hadn't wished anything. Or I don't know what you do. And those anti-wishing fables, I don't think I'm for.
So don't, if you have this possibility where your dreams could come true, don't articulate it.
It's like, what kind of propaganda is that?
Don't you better not wish for anything.
Why not?
It'll come true.
I want that.
Yeah, but then you'll be sorry.
I highly doubt it.
You pay. There's a downside to everything. No.
I don't believe that. So I think that keeps you from being imaginative or something. So don't wish for a thing. Just settle for what comes. Well, how did it get here? So
stuff just happens.
That could be too. But I just don't think if I have an opportunity to wish for something on a genae, or however it's pronounced, genae, I don't know. Who knows what that, it's gin is the original word, right? But then they had the booze and they go, got to change the name. There's already a gin in the actor's equity. They got a new one now. I'm a member, the union I'm in is from the 30s, I'm ashamed to say. But I'm not ashamed. Why would I be ashamed that I've done a little time traveling? My gosh, I've lived more lives and done more things and made more mistakes and gone back and started over more times than many humans have the opportunity to do. And I've lived to tell about it, and no one believes me, which is a wonderful thing. Again, it's the punishment for having my wishes come true. But I'm saying today, if you want to wish for something, you go right ahead. You wish your little heart out.
Are you being good?
No, I mean that sincerely. Why not? Why does it have to sound sarcastic? Why can't you be, it's not hopeful to try to think of something. And then, you know, that's what I think wishing is. Wishing involves getting a calendar and making lots of adjustments. Plans and everything, having meetings. That's what I do. My wishing is fairly advanced, but it's not enough to ask. That ask the genie really just means get started on pursuing something. And why? What's the purpose of life? Well, here's, I've got some news, so I kept it for a little bit into the show so everybody would tune out who didn't, couldn't hear it, and I don't want to be discouraging. But you know, like, how many licks does it take to get to the center of a Tootsie Pop? Well, as many as you want, but I got news for you. There's nothing at the center. Oh, this life of ours is a Tootsie Pop, and you can crunch down on it or lick it slowly, and you think, well, I'm working towards something like a treaty treat in the middle of this pop. But there isn't anything there. It's empty. The pop ends. That's it. There's nothing there. Surely there's not. There's a meaning. I don't think so. And I believe that it is reflected on Earth, the way that we treat each other, organize ourselves, or something. There's no master plan. It really just is some sort of like chaos. And there is a little bit of planning here and there, and stuff gets established and then destroyed. So what lesson can we learn from that? Well, the lesson we learn is that some things we will digest and some things will come shooting back out of our mouths. And somewhere in the middle there, even the things that we digest, we're going to use up all those calories and need more. So the learning never ends, because what happens is a lot of the previous information expires. Now, I've learned that about popular culture. Say, I will become literate. So there's lots of ways to become literate. You can become literate in literature, which also expires. Pop culture really expires. So you can learn, I know all the actors up to 1955 or something. Well, there's more information coming every day. And you will never stay the Trivial Pursuit champ unless you keep engaged. And so there needs to be some forgetting involved too, I guess. So you can't remember every single person who was on Johnny Carson. Just the ones that really, really mattered. Well, how can we tell? We can't tell. Oh my goodness, my friends. All I'm trying to say to you is that you don't have to be on your own back. Even though it's this wonderful contortion, how you've managed to do it and become a human Möbius strip is very impressive. There's only one other person, I say person, that I've seen do that, and that is Popeye. Popeye, from the cartoons, is capable of taking his head, putting it between his legs, coming up from behind, and I don't know what. And that's the animators were on alcohol, is my understanding. That's what a lot of those early comics are so good. Say, what were they on? And go, alcohol. It's not any harder than that. Isn't that something? I guess maybe sometimes they were needing the alcohol, and then they saw all sorts of interesting things that they could then reproduce. Oh, the imagination. Our fears, our dreams, our nightmares. They all make wonderful content. Now, that word has been ruined by the internet, but we used to have a table of contents. And what is that? It's just a table and whatever's on it. I know. But if it's in a book, its importance is exaggerated. And you say, well, here's a list of the things inside. It's just a short, the contents are vast compared to what I'm going to list right here on the tabla de contents. There is no table of contents for life. There is no index or concordance. There is no reference. There is no reader's guide. There is no, what's the one where you cheat thingy? I don't remember. There was a really big one when I was a kid, and you go, you need to get that, for you're never going to be able to read As I Lay Dying. You better get the Cliff's Notes. And Cliff said, man, why do I have to do this? Now Cliff he's out of a job because of AI and everything. And now you don't even have to read it. You go, AI, read the book, and then don't tell me, but then write an essay. All right. And you cut out the middleman. And then I can leave me some leisure time. And what do I do in my leisure? Well, I don't know. Learn. No, that seems stupid. I don't have to do that anymore. What are you going to do when the robots come for you? Oh, you are a chimpy ape up against robots. It'd be wonderful to see. I'm sure it's been done on film. Say, oh, Roboto versus King Kong, 19... Of course, we've already seen it. We've seen monkey creatures or monkey robots as well in the imagination of our ancestors, our recent ancestors, and their alcohol-fueled hallucinations that they put into art. I'm fascinated by it. Our experiences here on Earth are myriad, complicated, confusing, chaotic, short, long, smelly, not smelly, but perfume, too much perfume, not enough perfume, other things, aspects. I'm trying to think of something. I need a thesaurus, and I don't have one. But how many words do you really need? I'm trying to think, because I'm trying to learn another language. I do this all the time. I'm not going to tell you what, because I'll quit. No, I won't. But the thing is, how am I going to learn enough to speak? And then, well, I can speak like an idiot pretty quickly, you know, and just point to things. There. Where? There. Like that. And that's talking. I mean, if an animal did that, you'd be really hella impressed, right? If an animal spoke some foreign languages, any language as well as I speak it, you'd be like, what? What? And I've gone to countries where I've said just a couple words of the language, and they look at me and they go, what? It's a chimpy monk. It is. Why is it speaking? And that's because I've educated myself. And so I've tried to mitigate a little of that. Does not mean to pee on, that's micturate. I've mitigated a little of my animal tendencies with being erudite. And you can do it too. It's okay to open your mind, to be open-minded. It's got a bad reputation now. They say, oh, your mind's so open, your brains fall out. Well, I know that rigid thought and authoritarianism is tempting. You know, so I wish somebody would think for me. And then they just, a bully just goes, like, you got to be crazy to think otherwise. And you go, oh, you're right. Dude, that guy's crazy. You're crazy. And then that's all you have to do. And you have your courage of your convictions. You don't have to really think about things. But I welcome others to be in a constant state of baffling confusion. If you are, I believe you're really living and really thinking. Being sure is, I love it and I do it, but know that when you do it, you're just doing it for practical purposes and you're faking. Don't internalize it. Don't say yes, because I lie all the time. I have to, because otherwise there's no way of getting along with the chimp apes. They are simply too treacherous. So you've got to, like, you know, I'm going over here, like that. You got to be cagey a little bit. And there's nothing wrong with it. Oh my goodness. Honesty. This anybody who insists on honesty is trying to control you. Be honest. Why exactly? Unless you have some kind of pact, you know. But I think just in general, it's a little bit controlling to insist on, tell me the truth. I don't think it's going to be your truth once I, you know, you're going to manipulate it. That's what we're talking about. Tell me your truth. You don't want to hear my truth. That sounds like about jingoism, but it's not. Explain it. No. No, I'm not promoting anything. I'm going to be all cagey about my insides, because some people are welcome in, but mainly no one is except me, and that's okay. Well, you let somebody... No, I don't... Why? You know, first of all, it's a mess in here. I'm embarrassed. Secondly, my mind is my only refuge from all these chimpy apes all around me. I understand I'm one, and I smell my armpit and I pass out just like a chimpy ape does. Ooh. I am managing. Oh, that's Rockford Files. It's so easy to plagiarize. I can't tell you how many George Harrison songs I've written. And isn't that funny? I turn them into old R&B songs. But I start with Beatles songs. And then I'll just change something. Just change one or two little things, you know? Blackbird singing, I like blackbirds, they are nice, I like them. Blackbird singing, and I like them, you know? So you just, it's not enough that I think it's, I owe anybody anything. But I once did a thing that I liked and I had it again. Womp, wada, dum, dum. And that's the way I write, is I just take something a little bit of yours as a prompt. Nothing wrong with that. Just change the instrumentation, change the words, and no one will notice. Oh, I'm having fun with you. Not lying. I mean, you know what I mean. Aren't you having fun too?
Yes, Artie.
Good. Oh, that's a fun time, because listening to the radio can be, it's such an intimate thing. And you don't want to be intimate with anybody you know. That's problematic. It's like, oh, I wish I hadn't have done that. That's where strangers and fiction and all come in. That's why people relate to fictional characters so much. So it's so safe and wonderful, and that's okay. And you can let them in all day long. And I have the whole cast of Star Trek's in there, but William Shatner's not welcome. So that's what I'm saying. My internal world, my mind palace, is really not, it's more like the Villages, with all sorts of retired icons and things from my youth. I have whole streets that are lined with characters from sitcoms and other things that were on when I was a kid, living right next to cartoon characters too. It's surreal. But they all occupy these little places in my mind, and I can't shake them. And when I go and I look for images, or I'm making a thing and I'm like, I need a character, this recycled character, the Skipper from Gilligan's Island, will walk up and say, oh, I'm totally available. I'm like, all right, Skipper, I don't know what I'm going to use you for, but you'll think of something. And that's kind of nice, I guess. And maybe everybody's always done that. And Shakespeare did that. Say, I'm thinking of kind of like, use like Julius Caesar for something, except he's, you know, doing something slightly different. Not dying. No, he'd still die or whatever. But I don't know, man. I haven't really thought it through. Maybe they wouldn't be wearing togas. They'd be wearing something modern. Do you think that would be a good idea? I have so many ideas for show business. If anybody out there makes TVs or movies, TV shows or movies. If you make TVs, that's lovely too. You know, somebody was just like, oh, my uncle works for Samsung. And you go, no, that'd be great. And I wouldn't mind like a custom, small old black and white custom television. I'd love it. With an just for the antenna. And, I have that. So maybe all my needs are met. But if you write television or anything, I saw another, you know, because I met him at a wedding, Stephen Zacharias, I saw another All in the Family. I think somebody from MeTV listens. Are you listening and programming the show? Because I'll talk about him, and then you'll do a bunch of episodes that he either conceived. And this was one, I think it was the one, it had Bert, what's his name? The guy who started his career in his 60s and just played really ancient looking. Bert, oh, you know, I mention him all the time. I'm losing my mind. I'm not as sharp as old Bert. Boy, that happens to the worst of us, doesn't it? Now, my mind used to be like a steel trap. What does that mean? It means there'd be all little bits of flesh and dried blood on the blades of my mind trap, where I'd caught something in it, game or a child. Bear traps terrified me as a kid. I never saw one, you know, in the wild, but they'd have them in cartoons and people would step in them. And I thought, you know, hopefully your leg goes in the little, between the little teeth. They seem to, and I go, these look very survivable. But really, I think it grabs onto you with these steel teeth jaws and you're mucked after that. So I was worried about them. I don't know where I thought that I'd encounter them. I mean, what if I slide into second base in the softball game and it's really a bear trap? And that's something, if I thought it as a child, I couldn't probably unthink it. So, yeah, scared. Normal kid fears like that, though. And monkeys. That monkey, just hordes of monkeys. That, I think, came from Jungle Book. A Jungle Book. The Jungle Book? A Jungle Book. The Jungle Book. A Jungle Book. And Jungle Book? And Jungle Book. I don't know which it is. But it's Rudyard Kipling, beloved. Oh, they love. He wrote so many great World War I poems and everything. The female of the species was more deadly than the male. I remember that, reading that poem as a kid, and I was like, what's up with Rudling? Rudyard or whatever his name. Rudling, I'm calling him. We accidentally named our child Rudling because I thought it was Rudling Kipler. And we loved the Jungle Book. And especially Baloo, the Baloo, the South Asian bear. And and then there's a panther and a tiger. Tiger seems like appropriate. And then African elephants or Indian elephants. There's those. And I'm trying to think of other thing. Large Amazonian snake also, right? Isn't it like a boa constrictor or something like that? Or anaconda, one of those South Asian anacondas. And it should be a cobra. And it should have bit the kid in the first scene. And then the rest of it is just him hallucinating orangutans. Again, native to Borneo. So I don't know, what a wonderful, magical place the Jungle Book is. And I guess it just gives it away right there in the title. It's a book. It's not happening in the world. It's happening in this magical book. A child who's wearing a diaper opens up a book and he goes, I'm going to go in and live with the magical animals and with this jolly old uncle who's like a 40s comedian or something. Come on in. We're going to eat ants. And then kind of motherly panther. Not weird. I don't know what that character's inspired by. Maybe Tupac's mom. So there's all those family dynamic going on, and I want the show to be that a little bit, I think. And I don't want you to fear, just because we live and are scary monkey people, and we are apes. Oh, don't we know it? And apes in denial. And that's maybe the worst part. Is I don't know what we think we are, but I got news for y'all. If you've never been to a public restroom, visit, and you are animals. And it's wonderful, and it's not. But what would be more wonderful is if you sort of like push back against it a little bit. I don't know. And then that's maybe asking too much. But I, as you know, like to dream. I like to imagine the world as I want it to be. And you may say these three wishes are going to backfire on you. You are going to rub your lamp, which is a metaphor. And what's going to come out of the lamp? Genie. And you make your wishes for the future. You bear fruit. And those ideas or those dreams take root and grow. And so what do I see? Am I leaving any kind of legacy to, oh, bless you. Come on, get a hug. I'm worried about you. I don't have the solution. I wish I did at my age. I'm a little bit ashamed of myself. But then again, I think that I've looked pretty carefully, and I'm pretty sure there is no center that there is no thing in the middle of it all. And, you know, maybe that will save you a little time. And just let me give you some of these hugs. And to, first of all, to refresh your soul, make you feel a little better. Now you're going to stand up and you're going to find that maybe you have everything you need. Do I? Well, you maybe not won't need it as long as you think you will. You know, life is so temporary. I think sometimes we're worried. We go, oh, I'm going to have to live forever at this rate. Don't worry. You won't. So, my goodness, get away with what you can. And I hope we can, you know, find your joy constantly, even if it annoys your superiors, because they're monkeys. And they're just the weirdest kind. But bless them, always showing their teeth. A prized possession of mine when I was in about the fourth grade or so was my Lancelot Link secret chimp lunchbox. And it was a beauty. Like many lunchboxes, it was patterned on a show that was popular with children. And you could get, maybe Brady Bunch. I wasn't into that. Or Partridge Family. But I was into the show where the monkeys, they'd put peanut butter on their lips. And they go, hey, Mata Hari. And so I adored it. And I got the lunchbox. And then what I did was, I think I just left my lunch in it 1 week. You know, and it got fetid, and then it started to rust, you know, because whatever, the jelly or something leaked, and then it was a mess, and then we had to throw it out. And you think, well, that's a collector's item now. It would do me no good now. I don't have the same relationship to it. It wouldn't bring me the joy it brought me. It was a special little whenware, a little spatial temporal coordinate that can't be plucked away from where it is. And I get those all the time. Some things are special just for this moment. What a wonderful thing. I've held objects like that. You go, oh, this is so great. You know, food is like that, you know, because it's so, I'm about to shove this into my mouth. It's so gorgeous. It looks too good to eat. If you don't eat it, it'll rot. You have to seize this whenware. It's right here. Oh, let's, y'all looking around. I think that's sometimes at the show, the sticking point with some. Like, what's the point? Oh, you're looking for a point. All the things you think are points, you might have been being deceived. You know, they might not be points at all. Or you might be able to put a point anywhere you want. You can turn anything into an inspiration. That's what I, you know, listen. I think it's like listening to something like this is like going through the trash if you're a collage artist. You know, so you go through some interesting bits of paper. And they might not have any value like they are. You know, this is a train ticket right here. This is an ad for a pub. This is some little piece of art or something somebody discarded. But when you grab them together and you kind of put them into a interesting collage and you repurpose them, and they have great value again, not forever, but for that moment. Not forever, but for that moment, they are great for you. They are interesting bits of paper that you can collage, and that's what I'm offering to you. So I could say something, and you could run with it, say, you were talking. I don't know even what you're talking about, Hardy, but you said some combination of words. You said around the egg. And I was like, around the egg. And then I wrote the song called Around the Egg. And I don't even know what you were talking about, but it was just, now that, to me, is the beauty of life. That's the greatest making, I think. I mean, I would never think, oh, you owe me for that idea. It's not, that isn't the thing. It's not even the information that was passed that mattered. What mattered was it was the little spark of something that went out. Beautiful intentions that we can project to one another. So I can be on the radio and know my intention is literally to make you feel a little more joy in life, to have some relief from the confusion, from the absolutely oppressive, crushing confusion and stress of existing with other humans. Because I don't know if just existing would be like this if it weren't for others. Oh, they save us, we depend on them, and they destroy us too. So there's got to be a way to float among them. Oh my goodness, here, try this on.
What are you wearing?
You tell me.
You tell me.
You tell me.
What I'm wearing.
What you're wearing.
I'm wearing something. Don't get weird.
No, I know, but I meant like an outfit or a costume. Fancy dress.
Fancy dress.
Fancy dress. Like the English, British, UKers say. I don't know what they call themselves nowadays. But we are can wear a costume. Sometimes I have to go through life like that. I got to be in character, either literally or internally. And it's okay to have that kind of romantic internal life. Say, I'm not going to get through this workday at this banal, soul-crushing undertaking. I'm sitting in this room that's designed to keep people dispirited and unimaginative and on edge. And I'm going to find an escape route somehow. I'm going to find my way out of here mentally. Oh, I'm going to be here doing things. But, you know, I'm going to find a way of elevating it. Not for you, for me. Oh, I do it all the time, my goodness. I do it just to calm myself. So I'm going to make a little ritual out of this thing that I always do. I'm going to add a step, or I'm going to pause a little bit as I do it. I try to do that making coffee. I go, look, make coffee a little bit more. I mean, don't get carried away, but, you know, make it a, that's a bad example because people get real carried away with the coffee goes farther than tea ceremony practically. So I like it to be a bit like, I need my coffee now kind of thing. So I don't have time for a ceremony really. But some things, it's nice to just slow down a little bit. Oh my goodness. Maybe you don't want that from your entertainment. Say, I like things that boom, bam, boom, boom, bam, bam, boom show. Where they're always blowing up or something. Have they got superheroes flying through the air, shooting rockets from their hands and their feet and all the extremities? And land and say, I'm made of metal, or I'm made of goo, or I'm made of a mist, or I'm a time-traveling god. But I'm going to battle this big creature made of stone. But they're really big. So even though I'm a time-traveling god, it kind of evens out. Because the stone giant is the size of the universe. I love that stuff like that, but I don't have really the resources to do so many of that. I have in the past, you know, done a lot of Foley. So I can crush a green pepper and have it sound like a skull being crushed. I was just watching something, and was it Murderbot or something? And I heard a wonderful green pepper being crushed. There was some good, gross Foley. Yeah, it was. It was that. They were tearing a spinal cord out of this fleshy robot. And I heard some vegetable action. I don't know if it was celery or it sounded like some green pepper. It was nice. It was real wet and fleshy and rippy. Oh, it was nasty. I love it. You can just, your whole, there's a whole horror show in your crisper, in your fridge. Just get it out there, mic it up, and then just start crushing bell peppers and breaking celery and snapping carrots and everything like that. I love it. I got a whole audio library now of that. I'll have to whip it out again soon. I used it for combination Twin Peaks Rockford. Is that what it was? I can't remember. I think it was. Oh, bless me. These things go by. I do them and I forgot I did them. But I don't really forget. I forget on purpose. Because then I'll be like, oh, whatever happened to that thing I did? I like that feeling. Oh, this time we have together. At the end of the old Carol Burnett show, she would come out and she'd say, "Hey, we didn't write enough skits this week. I'm so glad we had this." Up top of the show, she'd do take some questions too. Then they would have to go, "Tim Conway wasn't particularly funny this week. And so I'm going to do an outro. I'm so glad we..." And then she'd sing this song. "That's time together." And then she'd say everything that happened. Just to have... I think Bob Hope invented that. So Bob Hope used to have these specials. And at the end, he would come out and go, "Thanks for the memories. Don Rickles' comic pace livens up the place. Toadie Fields was here as well. And did she, boy, did she do swell. So thanks for the..." Carol Burnett was like, "I'm so glad we had this time together. Just to have a laugh and sing a song. Tim Conway made fun of elderly people and something else." That's very similar. And so I'm going to do an homage to that right now and say that, I did write... How much of it was of this show was written? This one is unusual because all of it. I wrote it to sound organic or whatever. I wrote that down too. And it says ellipsis to sound natural, I mean, you know? Or ellipsis? I'm reading it verbatim. Isn't that interesting? It's like, you say, "Oh, this dialogue is so real in this play." And yet, it isn't, you know? What am I hearing exactly? So I am not afraid to say that the script went short. And so now I'm going to sing a closing song. "I have lived among the chimpy apes, and I realize that I am one of them. Oh, the chimpy apes are full of blood and guts and brains and brawn and phlegm. But now I reach the age where I start to assess my life. I look back on my chimpy ways. I look at yours. I think, what can I do for you? What can I say? I only say, keep picking those bugs off of your fellow apes. And a lot of them are salty. And just eat one of those salty bugs right out of their fur. It could be a tick. Say, I don't know if you're saving someone from tick disease, Lyme disease, or if you eat the ticks off of your fellow ape, are you taking the Lyme disease in? Or does that get rid of it? See, I'm not sure. Maybe just flick them... Oh, I don't know. I've never lived. I have no memory of being that species. So it doesn't work that way. I wish it did, and we'd have this, "Oh, I remember being a shell or a shellfish." And maybe everything is alive. Maybe our skeletons are alive, like I said. Maybe your heart is a separate little yokai that comes out and runs around, eats too much fatty food. My heart jumps out of my chest and bathes in French fries, and it's starting to get a patina. So I don't know whether to have it cleaned or what. I've tried with the statin. What kind of statin? Brooklyn, Bronx, Manhattan statin. It's a new one, and it's supposed to clear up your arteries and unclog them so that you can eat even more fatty foods. Oh, thank you for joining me so much. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. And you are such a blessing, and I'm glad to be with you today. And I will see you again next week.
Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony. Her name was 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 Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony. Mahogany. Twins' name was Ebony.
make you feel secure. Remove all your doubts.